I want you to imagine for just a moment that we've solved all of the diversity concerns we've discussed. We've removed stereotype threat, we've stopped raising awareness of stereotypes, we've reduced reinforcing that negative stereotypes exist, we've helped people to capitalize on identities in which stereotype threat doesn't apply, we've fostered a growth mindset to help reduce the effects of any stereotype threat that might remain and otherwise help them be good students, we've identified and rectified our own implicit biases by creating counter biases to cancel them out, by increased awareness of them, by using filtering techniques and algorithms. We've learned about the microaggressions that are implicit biases and learned behaviors cause. We've handled all of them, but we still see, as we measure, a differential performance, where group A appears to do worse than group B. Does this mean A is inferior? I suppose it's conceivable that it does. We've left out another thing that is worth thinking about, and what might cause these kinds of differences, and that is differential preparation. That is to say, students don't arrive to us with all the same backgrounds and same readiness for what we're about to teach them. So there's different kinds of differential preparation. One, sort of the biggest, is prior exposure. If you have already had a course that teaches a portion of what I'm about to teach you, then you're going to find it much easier to do this course. Your brain will have partially developed schemata that I can build off of. You're going to learn more quickly and understand more fully, assuming that was a positive exposure. Also, there are various prereqs. If the prereqs are things that you had a solid understanding of from a good quality education, or they just happen to be part of your curriculum, you're going to be able to use those techniques and that prerequisite knowledge to build the knowledge we're talking about more easily without having to distract some of your working memory to understanding those prerequisites. There are also things that are less visible. For example, there's a concept called the hidden curriculum. It's a broader space and I'm not going to fully characterize it, but roughly we can think of this as being the things you need to learn to do well in school that aren't the topics of school. Things like study skills and social behavior and how people expect you to react and fitting in and feeling like you belong and so forth. This whole set of things that you learn as part of being in school that some people come in with a good understanding of, perhaps because their family has prepared them for it or the like, and others people come in with far less. And then there's also this other idea I want to talk about particularly in this video, this idea of hidden prerequisites. Things you needed to know to do well in the class that often even the instructor of the class didn't realize you needed to know to do well. Let's take a classic example from computing. It's all, of course, difficult to locate in general, but this is one that's been well studied, the idea of spatial reasoning. Spatial reasoning came out of early attempts to try to create a universal intelligence test. Turns out that that didn't work, as each subject of a universal intelligence test also fails because intelligence is unclear if it's actually a thing that can be measured. But this effort was to say, we're going to basically make you rotate things. We'll draw a picture of a shape in two different positions and ask you to say, can you rotate this other shape the same amount? It's kind of mental manipulation of spatial representations. Now, for some fields, it's fairly obvious why this would be related to what we want you to do. If you are physically constructing things, maybe doing mechanical engineering or sculpture or the like, these seem like strongly valuable skills. One of the surprises, though, is that we find this particular skill is correlated with many different disciplines, including, in particular, CS classes. I'm actually unaware of any study that shows they're correlated with ability to perform CS after you leave school, but particularly in low-level courses, there's fairly strong evidence that your stronger spatial reasoning will help you learn more, more quickly, and end up knowing more. But why would that be? Why would your ability to rotate shapes in your head have anything to do with working with a computer? And why is, of course, always difficult to understand, but I'm going to give you some thoughts I have. Pick any topic in CS that is not have a spatial analogy. Here's the challenge. Now, still, I give you a few ideas of what I mean by a spatial analogy. When we talk about recursion and how that works under the hood, we talk about the call stack. Stack is a spatial term. It suggests the idea of being able to put one thing on top of another and another thing on top of that and another one on top of that and be able to unstack them later and remember what was there before. It relies on this idea of space to understand. Even though, of course, inside the computer, nothing is physically moving. We are just changing voltage in a fixed array. But we use this analogy to talk about them. We also talk about pointers and address. Even though nothing is pointing at anything, nothing has a location to point to, nothing has an address, they don't exist in place. But we use these to talk about these ideas. Even simple things like variables, which you might think we don't have, the variable word itself is not spatial. When it's taught over and over again, I have seen many, many times it is taught, and I've taught it this way myself, teaching it as a box that we put values in. We say, hey, what does it store? Instead of talking about repeating, we talk about a loop. Talking about this spatial structure of the code itself, which is just text, but we still talk about it as if it has this physical relationship. Try to find a topic in CS that doesn't have a spatial analogy. Now, some of you have succeeded in doing that. Huzzah. But probably not most of you, because the vast majority of our field is taught and often has official names that are spatial in character. After I learn about recursion, I don't think about the stack anymore. After I understand how addresses work, I don't think about the fact that we're calling them addresses. Once I understand variables, I don't think about boxes and things inside of them. These are learning tools. But they're learning tools that depend on my strong spatial reasoning. The better my spatial reasoning, the better these learning tools work, because the less working memory the learning tools themselves take. Now, why would this be something I'd talk about in a week that's overall about diversity? Well, in addition to all of these other kinds of problems, in general, different populations have different experiences, different backgrounds. They have been exposed to different things. And one of the things we find for spatial reasoning in particular is it's built by certain kinds of leisure activity. It's rarely taught, but it tends to be developed. If you play with blocks and other sort of spatial skills, if you do sort of spatially immersive video gaming, right? First-person shooters and maze type of games in particular. These kinds of things are not universal in their application. Different populations are culturally much more likely or less likely to be encouraged to do them or even have access to them. And so you find people come into the university with widely varying spatial reasoning that follows various stereotypes we might see about our field. And this prerequisite knowledge is something they don't really need to succeed in the career, but they need to succeed the way we teach. So what can we do about this? First, let's talk about differential preparation in general. If there's a differential preparation, the solution is to teach the things that some people may not have already learned. Okay? This is the ideal. But it isn't always possible to do about everything because of the density of a four-year-long education. So when we can't do this, there are some other ideas we can do. And one I would encourage you to think about for spatial in particular is using what we call manipulatives. Take the analogy out of their head. If you need to talk about a call stack, don't just talk about a stack. Don't draw out a stack as if it could be lined up in a row when it really can't. Physically get some paper and make a stack of paper. Let the paper do the analogy that the stack of paper is supposed to do. Okay? If you need to point to things, get students to physically point at things. Or draw arrows at least, right? Something to pull that analogy out of their head. So their working memory doesn't have to create the analogy. The working memory can work on learning from the analogy, which is what we want all of our students to do. Now, this is not the only hidden prerequisite, and it's not the only thing that people's preparation may be differential on. I encourage you to pay attention. When you notice a group of students seem to be struggling consistently with a topic that another group of students don't, look for what it is that they may have failed to learn before. And as you identify them and think about how to teach them or bypass that, if it's not key to what you're doing, you can help make your education more effective to all students.